First reading is taken from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 22, verses 15 to 22. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. And they sent their disciples to him, along with Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinions, for you are not swayed by appearances. Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why do you put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Therefore, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard it, they marveled, and they left him and went away.
The second reading is taken from Romans chapter 13, reading from verses 1 to 7, and that is page 948 on the in the church Bibles. Romans chapter 13, verses 1 to 7. Paul writes, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in thy sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. Well, I'd just like to begin again by welcoming all our guests, especially Jan. It's great to have you with us this morning at the start of this new mayoral year. But I didn't realize, well, I should have done really, but I didn't realize that I'd be speaking just after the referendum. Silly of me, really. I should have factored that in, but it's been a bruising time. And as you read the newspapers and as you read the comments on Facebook, it's getting brutal. It's depressing, isn't it, really? One Guardian journalist was saying that after recent events, it seems that although we must keep on talking about the United Kingdom, no one really believes that anymore. He said that we've become a country cleaved by rising inequality, prone to outbursts of anger and frustration. We seem to be in the middle of a US-style culture war. And all this has reached a peak over the last few days. Other commentators, just to show I just don't read The Guardian, I read other papers as well. Other commentators say that's what's really been exposed is the rift between the cultured metropolitan, metrosexual elites who thumb their noses at their small-town country cousins and who, for some reason, don't embrace diversity but nevertheless do not consider themselves any worse for that. Which is then met by incredulity. Where on earth have those ghastly people come from? And so, you know, you've got insults. I mean, Facebook is not a happy place. Insults. Bigot. Those who voted to leave are unpatriotic. And so it goes on. And people then give up. I mean, this is the crisis we're in. People then give up on governments. Despair sets in. You know, why bother trusting anybody? I mean, they all lie. Can't trust the banks. And so people turn their back on civil discourse and they just start calling each other names. Oh, the reason why you went to be PM is because, I don't know, you went to Eton. What's that got to do with anything? It's just an insult. And so people then start to say, well, why have governments at all? I mean, surely Rousseau was right. Wasn't Rousseau right? I mean, you know, start off the Romantic movement. Let's just get back to nature. Let's just turn our backs on the noise of these buffoons running the government and just go live on a desert island somewhere. I mean, I'd love to do that. You know, just didn't Sartre say hell is other people? Just live by myself in communion with nature and forget about everybody else. I mean, that's I can see them temptation, and that's out there. Now, how do we address this situation? Well, in our reading from Romans 13, Paul addresses that situation directly because he's writing that letter to Christians living at the heart of the Roman Empire who are living and dying under the Emperor Nero. And Nero was the last in a long line of Julio-Claudian Caesars. And these Christians in Romans were also being tempted to give up. They wanted to despise the emperor. They were becoming truculent and hostile towards him. And this was understandable. I mean, the emperor hated Christians. He said, they're haters. Christians are haters. So he throws them into the arena. He turned them into torches so he could drive around the Circus Maximus at night, lit by people on fire. But given that situation, do you know what Paul says? He writes to them and he says, listen, no matter how bad the situation is, governments are a good thing. Government is a good thing. Now, you may not believe me. Some of you younger people may not believe me. If you think it's awful, well, just go read William Golding's Lord of the Flies, and you'll see what a situation is like without government. And I think that needs to be said today, no matter how you voted in the referendum. Of course, many of you will be disappointed. Many of you will be angry. That's not to say that individual governors, individual magistrates, individual politicians can't become cruel and vain and despotic. Yes, that's true. But nevertheless, says St. Paul, now this is extreme. You want extremism? Here is extremism. Even though that's the case, you must honor the emperor. Respect those in authority over you. That's just an extension of what some other extremists said. Jesus was a radical extremist. He said, love your enemies. When you're insulted, bless. When someone strikes you in the right cheek, turn the left. Talk about radical extremism. Here it is. And you think, for goodness sake, I mean, that just goes against all my instincts, doesn't it? Doesn't it go against your instincts? My instinct is to, when I'm insulted, is to lash out, to hit back, to say it's unfair. That's not right. Bigot. How can Paul write this then? Well, I think Paul can write it to honor the emperor, respect him, give him revenue, honor where honor is due, respect is due, love where love is due. How can you write that? Paul can write it because he's looking at something really quite profound that nobody on Facebook seems to recognize at the moment. He's looking at something right down there, and he says, look, we've all got to realize, the whole country has got to realize, we are in desperate trouble. Desperate trouble. And he said, the trouble we're all in is that this world is full of hatred and violence. Now you say to me, oh gosh, I thought this is the Apostle Paul writing. What sort of insight is that? Anybody can see that, which is true. An atheist can see this. A Buddhist can see this. Anybody can see that we're in a world where there's a lot of hatred and violence is just simmering under the surface. Is that right? You know that, of course it is. And so Paul is saying, that's the reason, don't you understand? In all this turmoil, don't forget that governments are a good thing because they bear the sword. Now, why do governments bear the sword? They bear the sword because hatred can spill out just like that. A small calibration of the world events and we'll all be at each other's throats. It's just simmering there beneath the surface. And so governments, he says, bear the sword. Why? To keep the peace. To punish people when they step out of line and incite rebellion and violence and anarchy. That's why you need governments. And so they can deploy a whole range of punishments. Fines, imprisonment, I don't know, community service, all these sorts of things. And the government bears that sword to keep the peace. Now that's something valuable. No matter if the government is run by Brexiteers or Remainers. You still need them, don't we? We still need them. Desperately need them to keep the peace. Because I think Paul here is looking back, way back earlier in the book of Genesis, when we're told that God came to that point where he repented that he even created men and women. Because he said the world was full of violence. So Paul says, no. Bear this in mind. Remember this. Whatever side of the referendum you're on, remember, governments are there for your good. And that's, of course, why we spend millions and millions and millions of pounds. I mean, I should have looked it up, I know. But how much do we spend on the police every year? Or social services? Or lawyers? Or trade unions? All this stuff to keep the peace. Why do we have a diplomatic service? Have you thought about that? I mean, in every country in the world, we've got diplomats. Why? It costs us millions. Why do we do that? Well, they're there in these other countries to explain to the rulers of those nations what we're up to in this country, what we're thinking. And we need to do that because otherwise they could get the wrong end of the stick and start hostilities. So it's all there to keep the peace. Millions. I mean, I'd say billions of pounds. So then Paul says, remember that governments are there to keep the peace. But then he says something even more radical. And I wish he wouldn't say this. I mean, a lot of people wish he wouldn't say this because they think he's now compounding the problem. Because what he says is magistrates and councillors and mayors and all there, they're ministers of God. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? Why does Paul have to drag God into it? I mean, isn't God the problem? And so you might think that Paul's just making it even worse by saying that the authorities are ministers of God. Well, let me just say this. About 150 years ago, and for centuries before that, it was virtually impossible not to believe in God. I mean, that was the situation in this country for thousands of years. Virtually impossible not to believe in God. Everybody did. Even those brave souls that declared themselves atheists, they really, at the end of the day, had to revert to some kind of belief in God. You say, well, how did that happen? Well, let me explain to you. This is what they did. They said, look, we're all here by chance. You know that. We're all here by chance. There was this big bang. God doesn't exist. We're here by chance. There was this big bang. Life is pretty meaningless. We're here on this planet. We strut and fret on the stage, and then our voice is heard no more, and we're gone. I mean, life is meaningless. Right, okay. Then they went on to say, therefore, you should love one another. Why? Life is meaningless. We're here by chance. There is no God. Love one another, folks. Does that make sense? But they had to revert to that because it was a Christian country. Everybody was saying that. But we've come to a situation now, not where it's virtually impossible not to believe in God. We've come to a situation now where it's virtually impossible to believe in God. I mean, can you imagine if the next prime minister was a devout Roman Catholic? He'd be ridiculed. The media would lay into him like you wouldn't believe. Because he's the temerity to say in public as a secular politician that he's a devout God-fearer. It's virtually impossible now to say that. Now the question is, how have we moved from a situation where it was almost impossible not to believe in God to where it's now almost impossible to believe in him? I think that's quite an interesting question. Is it what's happened to the country that we've moved from there to there? What's happened? Well, what's happened? I mean, people are thinking about this. There are philosophers and theologians that are trying to plumb, you know, what's happened to the country, what's caused this radical change. They're basically saying this. You may agree with it, you may not, but this, I'll put it out there for you. This is what they're saying. Look, they say years ago, what happened is that men and women grew up, children grew up, and as they grew up, they realized that there were authorities outside themselves. So children would grow up, and in order to find their place in the world, they had to reckon that, oh gosh, there's the family. The family has authority over me. There's an external claim on me. There's the family. There's the government. The government has claims on me. There are these institutions in society. There's political parties. There are these institutions that say that I should behave in a certain way. There's the church, and then there's God. And so what happened is as people grew up, they figured out, okay, I've got to figure out my place in this world by figuring out where I fit in with all these external authorities. And that's how people grew up. That's how they took their place in the world. But there's a shift now. Because what people have started to say is, look, it's not so much about the external authorities out there. What about you in there? And so what people have done is they've started to think, I've got to develop my inner life. Climb, follow every rainbow, climb every mountain, pursue your dream, do what's right for you. Ian Hislop had that, don't know if you saw it, that program on Victorian philanthropists. Did you see that? These multimillionaire industrialists. So they were there and they were thinking, well, gosh, this wealth has come to me, but it's not really mine. I mean, it is mine. I've earned it. You know, I've worked hard. But actually, it's there for me to serve my community, to serve these authorities outside of me. And so I was reading up about it. I mean, they founded orphanages. They set up refuges for prostitutes. They established hospitals and colleges. One philanthropist, this is just one, supported the fishing industry in Ireland. He sponsored research into potato disease. He funded David Livingstone's exploration in Africa. He introduced cotton gins to Nigeria. He provided lifeboats to Britain and France. It goes on and on and on. Why are they doing this? Because they said this wealth isn't just ours. It's not just mine. It's for the community. But now people say, no. It's for me. It's for me. This wealth has been given to me so I can develop my inner life. I can flaunt my wealth with conspicuous consumptions because I'm telling everybody, look at me. This is who I am. I can buy 5,000 bottles of Bollinger and that's great because look at me. Because what's happened now in society is that people are saying, I've got to not conform to the world outside, the outside world's got to conform to me. And the church had better, hurry up and get with the program. And students today, they're reading history. Say, oh, gosh, I don't like this history. In the past, kings murdered their wives. I need a safe space. Because this is hurting my feelings. And so that's why, you see, people no longer join political parties. People no longer join the church. It's an institution. They're going to hand down to me doctrine that I haven't invented, and why should I accept that? I've got to find out my own beliefs. And people are saying that today, aren't they? They say, well, I've just got to explore myself, and I'll take that from Labour and that from the Tories, and I'll just say, make up my own political party that revolves all around me. Does that sound strange? I think that's what's happening. I mean, that's what some people are saying. It may not be true, but leading philosophers are saying that. Leading theologians are saying that. And they're saying that's what's causing the crisis in Western civilization. Because all the institutions are crumbling. Now, you may think that's new. Let me just tell you something. That's just ancient paganism. That's just the Roman Empire. All over again. It was exactly like that. It was like that with Nero. Before Nero, there were all these other emperors, and they were magnificent guys, really, in many ways. They were austere. They were Stoics. They were disciplined. They ate frugally. They camped in the frozen wastes of northern Europe with their troops. They sweltered in the Syrian sun and the deserts with their troops. They were tough guys. Because why did they do that? Was it for them? No, it's for the glory of Rome. That's what they were doing. So heroism for them was to stand in the breach and take the blow. And to do it with stoicism, to do it with your head held high, because you are sacrificing yourself for the greater glory of something that was beyond you and bigger than you. That soon changed. That soon changed with Tiberius. When Jesus was having that discussion about the coin, Tiberius was the Roman governor, Roman emperor. And Jesus said, what does it say in the coin? Remember that. He said, what does it say? Do you know what it said in the coin? It said, Caesar Augustus Tiberius, son of the divine. Because what Tiberius was saying, look, I am a god. It's not that Rome, I serve Rome. Rome has to serve me. And what he did was he turned the whole of Capri into his bedroom. Nero then takes it one step further. He turns the whole of Rome into his private pleasure dome, because it's all about me. Do you know what his last words were? Nero's last dying words were simply this: what an artist the world has lost in me. Paul says, No. You have to realize, O emperor, that you are not God. You are a minister of God. And because you are a minister of God, you will be held accountable to by God. Because the authority you have is not your authority. It's God's authority. And he has just given it to you for a brief moment of time. And he's giving it to you to administer justice for the whole world. And so when Jesus said, I mean, it sounds natural to us, but when Jesus said, you have to give to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar and to God the things that belong to God, Augustus Tiberius would have been amazed at that. He would have been stunned to think that there was something outside his jurisdiction that didn't belong to him. Now, can you see, ladies and gentlemen, can you see how freeing that is? When Jesus Christ, the eternal Son of God, says to the Emperor of Rome, there are certain things in which you have no authority over people's consciences. This is the first blow of human freedom the world has ever seen. That there are certain things the Emperor has no jurisdiction over. Now, let me just finish. Let's just push this down a bit. That's for the magistrates and the emperors. But it's also true of all of us. The life that you have, everyone here, the life that you have is not your life. It doesn't belong to you. You didn't create it. You weren't there at the very beginning saying, come into existence. It was life has been given to you. It's not your life. It doesn't belong to you. Now, for some people, that's a frightening thought. It's a frightening thought because people think, you mean I've got to be under authority? Yes, you do. But then I can't be free. There's this prayer in the prayer book, which we pray every morning prayer. It says, O God, who art the author of peace and lover of concord, in knowledge of whom stands our eternal life, whose service is perfect freedom. You'll find freedom when you return back to your Creator. You'll find freedom when you acknowledge that there's authorities over you and above you. You do that all the time. Just imagine if you did not recognize the authority of gravity. You would not flourish. That would not lead to social flourishing. You would die. And the same is true here. Unless you recognize that God has authority over you and the life that you lead is not your life and you to give your life back to God and live it for Him, that's when you're going to find freedom. I know it's counterintuitive to find freedom through service. That sounds mad. But I'll finish with this. Do you think Nero died free? He died enslaved to his passions. Remember when Jesus was having that conversation with the Pharisees, and there's all this question again about authority, and they said to him, we are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved. How is it that you say, Jesus, that we will become free? Jesus said, if I set you free, you will be free indeed. Do you want to be free? You've got to come to Jesus Christ. You've got to recognize who He is. You've got to recognize His authority. He has authority over you. He will one day come to judge the living and the dead. To be truly free, you've got to give up your freedom. One last thing. Many people, you know, if you go on the internet, if you read the papers, many people are hurt. I mean, really hurt by the decision in the referendum. And they're angry and they're disappointed. I understand that. I mean, people's jobs are on the line. You know, this could, who knows if this is going to end. So people are very anxious. But Paul says, give every man honor, every man respect. Jesus said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. How can you do that? You can only do that once you realize that, you know, governments come and go. This is the changes and chances of this fleeting world. But on the throne of heaven is Jesus Christ Himself. When you realize that, then you're not so bent out of shape by the passing of institutions, by the overthrow of governments, by the downfall of empires. Because you realize behind it and above it all is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, who both made you and died for you. And then you can think, look, the King of the universe, who made me and loves me, is in control. And that can give you a serenity, and that can give you a peace, which helps you to limit the insults you throw at people who disagree with you. Amen.